Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for representative nearest you. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.
Another word for the week is wheat. Can all-time highs entice U.S. producers to sow more of the crop this fall? We'll try to answer that question and so many more today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Roy Huckabee of the Lynn Group in Chicago, Illinois. Our panelists today are Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, Mike Georgie of Allendale from Mahomet, Illinois, and Greg Johnson of the Andersons right here in Champaign County.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's open today's discussion with this question. Lead option wheat futures made new contract highs several times over the last week, including on Friday. And while the September contract maintained a weekly gain, it settled 31 cents off the $7.95 a bushel record. Is this a function of evening up before the long weekend and a possible correction, or a sign of some real weakness in the wheat market? Greg Johnson of the Andersons.
I think with the tightness of stocks, we don't know for sure whether this is the top or not. But if you look at the technicals, we got the RSI up around 79 on Thursday's close, and wheat's been up so strong that I think we were due for a little bit of a correction, and only time, I think, will tell. You know, if the demand is really there, if we're really short wheat, it could go higher. But, you know, the nice thing is these are good prices. So farmers that have wheat and are selling at these prices, are getting a good price.
Bill Mayer, Roach Ag Marketing.
Yeah, I think the $8 level there that we got a little bit above actually today was probably a target once we made new historic highs earlier in the week, and I think that we're probably due for a little bit of consolidation here. As Greg said, you don't know when you're at these levels for sure, but I would look at this as a selling opportunity, even in the new crop wheat, and I think that's important for the farmer. Maybe we can talk about that a little bit more, but just because we have that huge inverse doesn't mean that we shouldn't go out and look at making sales in that 08 crop wheat, I don't think.
And Mike Georgie.
Well, I think everything they've said is definitely correct. I think we have a lot of emotion in this market. I think after they made the new highs, they wanted to hit $8 in this wheat. But, you know, they're looking at tight stocks. You've got India, which is a big buyer of wheat. They're supposedly going to have a big crop this year. But they've got 3 million already estimated for exports to them, and they've only so far bought about 600 million. So unless they buy a lot more, there's really no reason to go a whole lot higher right now.
September wheat had a high this week of $7.95. Their low at $7.14. A settlement price 41 and a quarter higher at $7.67. December futures $7.75 and a half. They were up 33 and a half from last week. Let's continue down this road just a bit with the wheat, because I'm wondering fundamentally which part of the wheat crop are we really worried or dealing with? Are we worried in dealing with feed wheat? I'm sure that's probably not the case. We're worried in dealing with human consumption at this time. Is that right?
I think so. You know, the export sales are very good. And as Bill was talking about, we can run old crop wheat up to who knows what, you know, if we really are short. But the new crop wheat, that July 8 wheat, is over $6 on the board. And that is definitely going to encourage, you know, quite a bit of switching over from cotton down in the south to corn in the southern parts of Indiana and Illinois. All over the place, we're going to see more wheat grown. And the nice thing about an early harvest this year is it's going to allow a lot of farmers time to disc those stalks under. And so traditionally, you don't see a lot of wheat after corn. But this year, I think you can see there will be time, I think, to get wheat in after corn.
So the acreage war is underway, and wheat is trying to lead the way. Over $6 in new crop wheat for the July. Anybody in Illinois not going to plant corn? Are they going to plant soybeans instead of this? What are they going to do?
I think there's areas of Illinois. I'm not sure. Central Illinois is going to go out and plant a lot of wheat. But I think as you get down in the southern part of the state where you have maybe some limits on your corn yields and you can come in and put soybeans behind the wheat, I think it looks like probably a lot more economic way to go right now. So I think we're going to see some wheat go into those areas. And I think we can't emphasize enough this old crop, new crop situation. You know, go back and look at the 96 corn when we did the same thing, made new historic highs, and we're trying to ration usage. The problem is nobody stands up and waves a flag when that job is done.
So we're rationing usage, and I suppose you're waving some kind of flag at this point because you said, relatively speaking, you said, I don't know whether fundamentally it has any reason to go higher. Is that for old crop and new crop both or just the old crop?
Well, I think that's old crop and new crop both. I mean, right now the old crop, nobody's producing any more wheat. So we're not going to have any wheat harvested here till October, November, when Australia and Argentina and Brazil starts harvesting. So the old crop, they're afraid. But I think you got to get the new crop hedged because once we get that going and once they figure out that we're going to plant a lot more wheat because people want to plant wheat and go with second crop beans where they figure I can make a whole lot more money than planting corn and paying a whole lot for nitrogen and all the inputs. So I think a lot of people are looking at a big crop of wheat this year. As long as we don't have weather problems, these are some pretty darn good prices.
Yeah, Mike made a good point. We're not going to add any more old crop wheat, but that reminded me that wheat is the only commodity that is planted somewhere in the world every month. So you can sure bet that these $6 prices are catching not just U.S. farmers' attention, but worldwide farmers' attention. And the other thing is, you know, if we don't think that farmers respond to price incentives like this, all we have to do is think back a year to the $4 corn. Who would have ever thought we were going to plant 14 million more acres of corn? But $4 corn certainly was a good incentive, and I think $6 wheat is a good incentive.
Well, it's a good incentive, Bill, but you suggested that, you know, when farmers look at this, they'll look at it and say, well, I've got nearly $8 old crop and only $6 new crop. Why should I sell my new crop at this point? But you maybe have a different opinion that maybe they ought to?
Yeah, I mean, I think the fundamentals, as Greg's talking about, we will get the acres planted in the new crop. And again, I go back to the corn situation that we faced 10 or 11 years ago. And in that case, the December 96 corn never got above $4, but yet we had the old crop corn up there, you know, $5.50 or above. I forget the exact number. So there's no guarantee that the old crop or the new crop has to go up just because the old crop does.
And let's move on to the corn and the soybeans at this point and talk a little bit about them. We'll start with the corn. September, a high this week of 340 and three quarters. They're low at $3.16. Settlement price for the SEPs at $3.24. They were down 17 and a half from last week. December corn at 340, and they were off 18 and three quarters from last week as we take a look at the marketplace. We need to talk about whether the corn market, where it's going to head as we move into the harvest season. I know, Greg, that you said you've got a couple of folks that are already putting corn in the elevator.
Exactly. The corn is drying down tremendously. We had about 15 of the 31 days in August at 90 degrees or above. So corn is doing a real good job of drying down. And, you know, we've heard one good yield and one bad yield. I think two people have started. And, you know, I think that's how it's going to be. It's going to be variable. There's going to be some very good corn and some very bad corn.
We asked most of our panelists at Farm Progress Show this week whether the lows were in for corn and soybeans. What do you think, Bill?
Well, I think I'd put about a 60-40 odds that it is. I see an attitude out here. I was really kind of disappointed this week that the corn couldn't do anything more than it did and went down 17 cents when wheat was going up the amount that it was. And I see an attitude, as I see a lot of email reports on yields, that, you know, this corn is going to make corn with this triple stack corn, I guess I have a little bit different attitude. I think we need to have some good yields out here if we're going to average what the USDA says we are in Illinois. But I just kind of see an attitude shifting on the corn yields, as you see them reported, that there's a lot better yields than what is expected out there. So I kind of see a little bit of a bearish attitude developing, it seems like.
Speaking of USDA, Mike, September the 12th is the big next crop production report. We'll start to see some numbers floating around probably next week. Has Allendale put anything together yet?
Yeah, we basically base our studies on the crop progress numbers. And right now we're guessing about 152 bushel an acre, 152.3, which is going to be about a 13 billion bushel crop, because we figure the crop progress now is usually low, and as we go into harvest, it increases. So we're looking at a 152. We were at a 149. We're hearing all across the South, Southern Illinois, Missouri, that farmers are coming in probably 30 to 50 bushel an acre more than they anticipated. So I think there is a definite bearishness to this corn market.
Greg, the Andersons elevator is primarily located in the eastern Corn Belt. I think Champaign's as far west as they get. Everything else in Indiana, Michigan, and Ohio, those are pretty tough areas, some of them. What are you hearing from the rest of the troop in the Andersons?
Well, Illinois is definitely the best. Western Indiana is going to be okay. And then as you move east, it drops off pretty significantly. I guess the bad news for the corn market is usually the traders don't care too much about your state if it doesn't begin with an I. So if it's not Iowa, Illinois, or Indiana, those poor yields in Michigan and Ohio are, you know, bad for us, but I don't think that's going to be enough to move the market.
Anybody heard anything out of Minnesota yet? I know they should be a little bit behind us. What do you hear?
I did hear one crop scout who said that the lawns were brown, cracks were in the ground, and he expected poor yields. But when he actually got out into the fields, he was seeing very good yields, 165 to 170, which for as dry as it was pretty impressive. And he doesn't know what to attribute that to, whether it's the triple stack corn or they had plenty of moisture early. Maybe it was a subsoil moisture, but maybe those yields won't hold up. Maybe there'll be some tip back and things like that. But when he took his samples a couple weeks ago, they were looking pretty impressive, all things considered.
Minnesota will need to produce a good crop. I think USDA was depending a lot on them this year if they're going to raise that 13 or 12.9
billion.
Then
Pro Farmer even had them a little bit higher than that, if I remember right.
Yeah, they're the number four producing state in the nation. It's, of course, I'll name them in order, Iowa, Illinois, Nebraska, Minnesota, and Indiana. We can throw an M in there and an N, too, with the three I states, I suppose.
I think what that means to me, Todd, is if you look at the support area in the December corn at about 325, and then if it goes through that 310, I think that's what you're looking at is probably a test down into that 325 area, which tonight's close, you're only about 15 cents below where we closed this evening on the 325 area. So yes. I think that's probably what we're talking about.
Yeah, Friday closed at $3.40 in the December contract. Once again, it was down 18 and three quarters. You think we might test that low? Will we get down there and test that? And what are cash prices actually, you think, going to do as we go through? Will we widen basis out?
Well, I think basis is definitely going to widen out. I think we can definitely see the corn prices go back down into the 320s. We see enough carry in the market to hold on to the old crop corn as well as the new crop corn. But what I've been telling my customers all summer is you got to make sure you got the storage. And I think that's going to be the problem is, are we going to have the storage for this huge crop?
Okay. I hate to ask you this, Greg, but I'm going to anyway. Which one do you want guys to store at the elevator? You want them to store their corn or their soybeans at the elevator at this point?
From a farmer's point of view, I think you should sell corn only because there's less downside. There's more upside to the price and less downside to the price on corn. I don't see corn going much more than 10 or 15 cents lower, as Bill said. I'm not even sure it'll go that much lower. And even if it does, at some point in time, we'll stop focusing on how big this year's crop is and figure out that we need to plant acres again for next year's crop. So I'm very bullish corn, and I think it'll pay to hold on to corn, and there's very little downside to corn. I mean, 10, 15 cents, that's, in the big picture, that's very, very limited downside. Beans, I know there's the $9 and the $10 talk out there, and so beans could go higher, but I think if South America responds and plants beans, they could go lower too. I just don't have a good opinion on beans. So beans could go 50 cents higher or 50 cents lower, but I think for corn, there's more upside than downside. So from a farmer's point of view, they definitely should hold on to corn.
Store the corn, sell the beans if they don't have a place to store them. Anybody else? I've heard the other opposite direction a couple of times. Anybody differ from what we got here?
I'd have to agree with him because, I mean, we've got an objective of maybe $7 on these beans. So I think he's right. 15, 20 cents, maybe an extreme low in the corn and beans, they could go a whole lot lower.
I think your best play on the soybeans is to go out there and lock in some kind of a level in the futures out there in July of 08, say, and then wait for the bases to come in because you've got the futures high now and the bases weak. So if you can lock in the futures price somehow with a put or something and then wait for the bases to improve, that's probably your best play on the beans.
From the soy complex, September beans had a high this week of $8.80.5, the low at $8.37.25. They settled 19 cents higher at $8.68. November beans at $8.82.5 were up 17.5. We'll quickly pick up the oats as well. September oats at $2.42. They were down 5. What do you think of the news out of China that our soybeans are too weedy and they don't want to take them anymore? I see everybody smiling, but I just thought that was, if they were going to pick something to try to pick a fight, weeds was not one of them when you have glyphosate-resistant beans in, what, 80% or 85% of our crop. Anybody make any different out of that?
It's amazing how they, I think they found something wrong with the $5 corn back in 96, too. You know, I mean, it, you know, if beans would drop to 650, I think all of a sudden the weed problem would probably go away. So this may be just another instance of trying to talk the market a little bit lower.
It's a political issue, not a quality issue.
All right. Let's take a look at the Mercantile Exchange very quickly. August live cattle, high this week at 95.57.5. They're low at 93.80. Settlement price there at $94.10, down 27.5 from last week. September feeder cattle, and this is the new lead, at 117.52.5. They were off 5 cents from the previous lead on Friday last week. October lean hogs at $70.40 for their high. The low at $66.75, a settlement price. Down $3.82.5 at $66.82.5. And the bellies at $90.41. They were up, I guess I'm reading this right, at 20. Were they up $21.40? Can that necessarily be right? Dave Dickey figured those. That can't be a right number, but maybe we'll ask Roy. Maybe he could check that Mercantile Exchange number for us really quickly and tell us what the bellies did for the week. Anything out of the livestock side that producers ought to be doing at this point? I mean, if you think, Greg, that we're down at the lows, do they need to lock something in on corn if we're within 15 cents of the bottom of the range?
Exactly. I think they should. You know, the basis is going to be cheap this fall, so if they've got storage, they can lock in. If they need to buy it, they can buy it from somebody at some very cheap futures prices and very cheap basis levels.
And then I think on the cattle side, don't hesitate to look out there at those February and April cattle and lock that side of it in, too, as far as I'm concerned.
I think you got to look at the hogs as well. I mean, the hogs could go down another $3. The only reason the hogs are staying up here is they're still hoping China comes in and buys a bunch more pork. But the news is definitely negative on the hog side as well.
In 2 minutes, we'll talk with Roy Huckabee of the Lynn Group.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Temperatures warmed up again this week before a cold front brought relief from the heat and increasing humidity. In northern Illinois this week, temperatures were near normal, while in the southern two-thirds of the state, temperatures ran 2 to 4 degrees above normal. High temperatures on Monday through Wednesday reached the mid to upper 90s across central and southern Illinois, with a few locations reaching 100 degrees on Tuesday. 90-degree readings finally pushed back into northern Illinois on Wednesday. However, the cold front made short work of the hot weather, and by Thursday, refreshingly cooler and less humid air was streaming through Illinois. For the month of August, temperatures will end up about 2 degrees above normal in northern Illinois and as much as 7 degrees above normal in the south. Most of Illinois was dry this week. For northern Illinois, this was a good thing as it provided an opportunity for things to start drying out after last week's torrential rain. In central and southern Illinois, this was not such a good thing, as rain is needed. Locations in southeastern Illinois did get rain on Wednesday afternoon and evening as slow-moving thunderstorms developed along the cold front. However, despite heavy rain in a few locations, there wasn't enough coverage to make much of a dent in the drought conditions. We will see some gradual warming the first few days of September. A cold front about midweek could bring showers and thunderstorms to the entire state as it pushes through Illinois. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
And I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to Commodity Week. This is WILL Urbana. Our panelists today are Mike Georgie of Allendale out of Mahomet, Illinois, Greg Johnson of the Andersons in Champaign County, and Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois. Roy Huckabee of the Lynn Group is our guest today. With 25 years of experience at the Lynn Group, Roy is the principal of the firm and part of the management team, overseeing much of the company's day-to-day operations. He's the director of market research for all of the Lynn Group's commodity sectors, authoring the Daily Grain Fundamental Wires. Thanks much for joining us today. We appreciate it, Roy.
My pleasure, guys.
I'm going to ask you to put you on your line just a little bit. The Ag Econ Department here at the U of I has been studying the potential disconnect between the price of cash wheat and soybeans at the Board of Trade, and that study shows there is a disconnect. Do you believe it?
Well, I think that the important thing that consumer group is looking at, remember they're producers, and they're talking about the basis getting real cheap and futures trading so much higher than what the cash is worth. And when you look at the index fund buying in wheat, our open interest in Chicago wheat is six times the size of the crop. The world has decided that if they're going to go out and buy wheat, they're going to buy Chicago soft red wheat. And for the last year and a half, that market has raced ahead of what cash wheat was worth. We had wheat that we couldn't get rid of. The world wheat supply has become extremely tight. We've had back-to-back failures in the U.S. and Europe, Eastern Europe, Western Europe, Australia last year, and now we're threatening Australia and Argentina again this year. If you haven't felt it, we've been selling almost 1.5 million tons of wheat every week for the last 6 or 7 weeks, and all of a sudden, wheat's getting very tight. You're trading hard wheat at 100 over at the Gulf, and you're trading soft wheat at levels that are masked because our basis levels in soft wheat haven't tightened, but I think we're at a point where we've got to use all of the delivery wheat to get through the year. And we'll zero out delivery stocks. And at the end of the year, next summer, we're going to be trading soft wheat at big premiums to the board. So it's amazing how we make this cycle and it turns. But they were right for the last year, not for the next year.
Hey Roy, with beans hovering around $9, the question is, how many more acres can or will South American producers increase this year? It sounds like we need 8, 9, 10 million acres total between North America and South America to meet this biodiesel demand and increased food demand. And there are some stories that say physically South America can't increase by more than 4 or 5 million acres from year to year. But yet something tells me that the price is an awful good incentive and that we could see maybe more acres out of South America. What's your take on increased acres out of South America?
I'm concerned about the price of beans in reals for Brazil. I think that Brazil will grow a few more beans, but it's going to be single, double digit. You're talking about 2 or 3% more, not 10% more. I think that the amazing part to me is how diverse our American farmers become. Last year, we took our corn acres up almost 19%, guys, because of a 406 insurance price and the ability to advance sell new crop corn at 4.25 before we ever planted it. You talk to yourself. We're giving the farmer unprecedented new crop wheat prices. What do you think he's going to do about wheat this year? He's going to plant wheat till there's no tomorrow. So I think that our problem started. The reason the corn rally started was because our demand was going up and we were making fuel out of food. And we solved that problem. We planted enough corn acres that everybody got comfortable with it. Now, as we go forward, we're going to plant a lot of wheat acres to solve the problem in wheat. And it is tight. It's as tight as it's ever been, and it's very, very dangerous to allow a food to get this tight.
Let me follow up on that, Roy. As you look out here, I've read some stuff here in the last couple of weeks that really has a wide variation in estimates for corn used for ethanol over the next year or two. Mm-hmm. What's your feeling on that as you look forward and the ethanol demand? There's some negative margins out there as these new plants come on. What do you see there?
It's worse than negative. It's really bad. We haven't been able to hedge anything profitable from December forward. And if you look at today's value for ethanol and the price of corn, you're looking at numbers that are below variable cost. And for those that don't understand what I mean, the difference in running a plant and making money is one thing, but when you can't, you can add to your variable cost. You can cover all of your variable cost, so you're adding something to the fixed cost of the plant you're going to run, even though you're running with red ink. Today, from March forward, we're below variable cost. So I think that it means that the ethanol bloom is over with. But the problem is we got these plants, we're building them, we're going to run them, and I've cut back my corn consumption next year by about 250 million bushels from what the USDA is using, but I'm not going to cut it back any more than that because they've built these plants and they're going to run them. I think we're going to make 10 or 11 billion gallons of ethanol before we get the plants to a point where they just have to shut something down.
Well, you answered my one question I was going to ask is because I had read, too, and talked to some people that were supposedly in the know, and they had said we were going to have to cut it by 200 to 400 million bushel for ethanol, and and you answered that question. But I'd reading something else about the European Union's about they had a 10% set-aside on acreage. I mean, have you read anything, or what's the possibility of them having 10% more wheat next year?
I can tell you that it's going to be more than 10%. Their set-aside was reduced to zero last month. And they're going to react to the same wheat prices that our farmer is, so they're going to plant 10% more acres, and then they're going to react to the wheat prices also. For those of you that don't know, European wheat prices are pushing $10 a bushel, while our prices are pushing $8. If you go look at the difference in their nearby prices, they're about freight above our Gulf basis, our Gulf cash price. And I don't think they're going to import wheat, but that happens to be the way that market's trading. And for those of you who are talking about hedging new crop wheat, I happen to agree with it. I think it's the right thing to do, but you have to be very careful because in Europe, their new crop wheat is trading at $60 a ton over U.S. wheat. They're August Motif contracts, what I'm talking about. And I see people that trade wheat in the world that will buy U.S. wheat in the new crop because it's cheap and sell Motif wheat because it's expensive, and they see a 20% increase in wheat acres in Europe, and they see a big increase in Eastern Europe FSU wheat acres, so that next year, even though the U.S. will grow 15% more wheat acres, we won't be able to sell wheat because it's going to be sold cheaply by the FSU and the EU.
Roy, we appreciate you being with us. Roy Huckabee is with the Lynn Group out of Chicago, Illinois. Just enough time for a final word from our panelist in studio, Greg Johnson of the Andersons.
If you're going to grow wheat, make sure you get it sold ahead.
Bill Mayer of Rochag Marketing.
I think that you look at the corn market and you try to get 20 cents out of the basis, 20 out of the carry in the market, and possibly another 20 out of the price improvement.
And Mike Georgie of Allendale.
There's a lot of opportunities out there. Give us a call. We'll let you help you out with them.
I'm Todd Gleason. That's this week's edition of Commodity Week.
Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for representative nearest you. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.